Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. I'm your host, Nick Faye. With me, as always, Corey Waldron. How are we doing, Corey?
Fantastic. It's Sunday fun day.
We already got some breaking news to talk about. As always, you can check us out on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. But right into it, Corey, right before we hopped on the show, Ty Lue was fired from the Cleveland Cavaliers. 0-6 start, 30th in defensive rating, 22nd in offensive rating, last in three-point attempts. Initial reaction here in the news.
Not terribly surprised. I kind of felt this offseason he was probably one of the coaches that we were going to see fired this season. Obviously, some people had the Cavs fighting for a playoff spot. I just thought this team was going to be, you know, like a 10 seed, which, and they're far worse than I expected so far. And Kevin Love's already kind of banged up. And this team just isn't good. We've seen them on a nightly basis just look outmatched against other teams. Kevin Love has not been efficient. He's now the number one option. J.R. Smith is completely washed. So it's not all Tyronn Lue's fault. But the fact of the matter is, he was also kind of like a LeBron guy. They brought him in because LeBron wanted Lue. At least that's how I feel. And that's what pretty much did happen, I think, behind closed doors. So it's just, you know, slow start. It's a good time to fire him.
Like you said, going to the season, I wasn't very high on the Cavs. I didn't really see them competing for a playoff spot due to the roster, like you mentioned, K-Love having to be that first option, not really having playmakers, not having great defense, and obviously, like I mentioned, not shooting a lot of threes. You know, I think some of it's on Ty Lue, but also some of it's on the roster just not being that good. 0-6 are, like you said, we've already seen them in a couple games. They've been blown out by, you know, the Atlanta Hawks. The Nets blew them out. I know the Pacers took care of business with them last night. It just isn't a good fit, and it made more sense to do this in the offseason and really start the rebuild then instead of extending Kevin Love, you know, trying to keep some of your veterans. It would have made more sense to go full rebuild then, bring in a player development coach at that time. Obviously, right now, you know, they thought 0-6, maybe they'll look for a coach, maybe they'll bring somebody on staff. But do you think this kind of signals that the Cavs are going to go in a fire sale mode?
Yeah, I think it's time for a change up. I think that's exactly what I truly believe that they thought going into this season that they were going to be competitive enough to be a playoff team. I think they really thought that with who they had and how the Eastern Conference looked. I think this team really thought they were going to be a playoff team. And obviously, you know, we're six games in, and this team is clearly very far from being any type of playoff team. So I think it is time for them just to blow it up. I think they just had a change of, a change of mindset of what this team really is.
Yeah, I think they saw the issues, like I mentioned, with the team. There just isn't a lot of, you know, options out there, and just it's time to let guys develop. Looking at the roster, you know, we got some veterans. We got George Hill, Tristan Thompson, J.R. Smith, Kyle Korver, you know, Rodney Hood maybe as a veteran. Which guys do you see being moved this year?
George Hill, I think, is almost for certain, because there's a lot of teams out there that could use a point guard who's a two-way guard. Kyle Korver, as you mentioned numerous times, the Lakers are a team that probably will be calling for him because he's a three-point shooter. And this season, he's still hitting shots. You know, he can still shoot as long as he gets open. I think those two guys are probably the most likely to be dealt. And then, you know, Rodney Hood, I think, could if he continues to play decent. I don't think J.R. Smith has much value, if any. Tristan Thompson, no one's going to want that deal. I mean, Kevin Love might get some phone calls, but he's not worth very much either right now.
Yeah, it's definitely in. It's a large contract to move. The nice thing about the George Hill contract as well is I believe, you know, he's under contract for 2 years, but the second year is only partially guaranteed. I believe same thing with Kyle Korver too. So a team doesn't really have to lock up their cap books, and they'll still be good for the next year's offseason and really have the money. And they'll get a veteran. Like you said, George Hill and Kyle Korver look like the most likely to be moved because they're solid vets, and, you know, they can kind of help the team build. You know, other than the Lakers, I could see Korver being interested, you know, by the Sixers, by OKC. You know, obviously shooters are super important. He's not going to put up big minutes anymore, but I think in the high teens is a good number for Korver.
I think you bringing up OKC and Philly are two, those are really good teams that could use Korver. I think those are really good homes if he was to get dealt. They both need a shooter desperately.
Yeah, and he's the type of guy that really can change your spacing real quick. And, you know, a pairing with J.J. Redick and Kyle Korver would be nice, even if you have them in once in a while together, but just kind of splitting minutes with them, especially when you have guys like Ben Simmons and Markelle Fultz, and the same thing in OKC, you know, who we'll talk about a little bit later. They have spacing issues across the floor. You know, and Ty Lue, you know, to give him some props, 128-83 record, one championship, three Eastern Conference Finals appearances, and three wins in there. You know, it wasn't like he did a terrible job. I think it just is like we said, the roster wasn't great, and it looks like they're looking more so for a player development guy right now, if you were asking me.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's just, it's, they're out of the, he was their head coach, for, as you mentioned, for the title when they were contending for a title. They're no longer contending for a title. So you got to mix up the direction of, you know, who you're, the guy leading the team is.
Now, do you expect him to bring somebody off the bench as the new head coach, or do you expect him to have, you know, interviews during the season, which is a little bit less likely, but it is early in the year?
I think we're going to see the interim head coach. I can't remember his name. I know they said he's going to be the guy running the show for now. I think they keep him for a long part of this year. I don't really see them getting a new head coach this season. I feel like they're going to wait till the off season, personally.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit easier to do in the off season, and it looks like Larry Drew will be the interim head coach. So, you know, I think he has some experience there, and it just makes more sense to wait and do the whole process. If they do find somebody who's, you know, not, doesn't have a job at the moment, they want to interview him and it seems like it'll be a good fit. Yeah. But I feel like player development guys usually have a job or they're working in organizations at this point, and a lot of teams aren't really going to send their coaches for interviews right now. Any last thoughts on the Ty Lue front before we move on to some other topics?
I think we wrapped it up pretty well.
All right, sweet. And, you know, we'll have an article on OTG basketball probably in the next 24 hours on Ty Lue, so be sure to check that out. But moving on to the other latest rumors, and that's Jimmy Butler. As we all know, he requested a trade. He told Timberwolves he's not going to sign with them this offseason. The Rockets, after a rough start to the season, have kind of picked up on their offer. They've offered 4 first-round picks. Word is the Timberwolves aren't even interested. And then there's also talk that the Heat and Clippers are back in the mix. What are your thoughts on this right off the bat?
I mean, it's still such a messy situation. And, you know, now we're 2 weeks into the season and this has not been resolved. The Timberwolves are being stubborn. I don't know why they're holding back. I mean, I guess they're probably holding back so they can get more value out of Jimmy Butler since they know the value is so low, and start kind of a bidding war. I think the Timberwolves offering 4 first-round draft picks, if you're the Timberwolves, you take that. The Rockets at this point in time, they need a win now. I think we both know that this team was close last year and they're farther away this year than they were last year. You have to match talent with talent. And the only way to match this Warriors team, which I still don't even think they match the Warriors team by adding Jimmy Butler. But if you have James Harden, Chris Paul, and Jimmy Butler, hopefully you keep PJ Tucker and Capella. That's a really good, well-rounded starting lineup that can go pretty much head-to-head with that Warriors team. I think when Cousins comes back, it becomes a little bit harder. But I think if you're the Rockets, you got to win now. The title window is now. Chris Paul's not getting any younger. You got to make the deal if you really want to compete for a title. And as for the Clippers and the Heat, I mean, I don't think he re-signs with the Heat long-term. And then the Clippers, I don't know. I think those two teams, I'm not really a fan of Jimmy Butler going to either of them.
I think I'm a little bit more of a fan of the Heat and the Clippers in the sense that, you know, the Heat, I think Pat Riley would probably be able to convince him. He has that relationship with D-Wade. And for the Heat, this is an opportunity to get a star player because their cap is so screwed for the next couple of years. This is the only way they're going to bring in some major talent. Obviously, like you said, there is a risk if Butler were not to resign. The Clippers, I'd feel pretty safe because that was one of the three original teams that he requested a trade to that he was interested in. It's just more so what are the Clippers going to offer and, you know, how is it going to impact them this offseason? Is that the first piece that helps them bring in somebody like a Kawhi or a KD or something? Because we know that's a team that's going to be in the mix. From the Rockets' perspective, yeah, I think Jimmy Butler's definitely going to boost them in talent. The only question I have is, like, they depend so much on spacing and that offense when they run so many ISOs for James Harden and Chris Paul. Jimmy Butler is not a great three-point shooter. And like you said, does it push them over the top against the Warriors? I don't think so. So it's definitely a risk. But, you know, Daryl Morey, I'm sure, has done the calculations on and whatnot. And 4 first-round picks, I think, you know, looking at it quickly, you're like, all right, that's going to be a lot to give up. But if you think about it, they have all these players. Most likely those picks are going to be pretty low and pretty late in the draft as well. They're going to be, you know, spread out across about 7 years because you can't trade, you know, first-round picks in consecutive years.
Yeah, that too. So they're trading, you know, fifth graders at some point.
Yeah, pretty much. Because if you think about it, they're trading, you know, let's say, I think they might have already traded 2019. I'm not 100% sure. So like 2020, 2022, 2024, 2026, like they're definitely far down the road. I mean, coming from somebody with experience with the Nets, you know, there is definitely a big risk with it. If something were to happen to James Harden or, you know, that didn't work out for some reason, like Darren Williams didn't work out for the Nets and that kind of screwed everything over. So, you know, that does come with a risk, but I think you do kind of have to push forward. I know Jay Christian on staff has been very big in the Rockets trying to make this push. Now, getting to the Timberwolves side a little bit, it's like, What are they doing? What are they thinking? They were booed off the court, I believe, Friday night against the Bucks after a 125-95 loss. You know, we know the relationship with Cat, Wiggins, and Butler isn't great. So on the T-Wolves side, what do you think their thought process is?
I mean, I think the issue is the lack of everyone being on the same page. You know, Thibodeau is set on keeping Butler. Butler is set on getting out. And then Wiggins and Cat are kind of just – they both just want a future without Butler. Obviously, they say the right things in the media. You know, we want Butler here. Butler gives you the best chance to win, which is true. Realistically, Jimmy Butler on this roster makes his team better, no question about it. And when you lose him, you're going to be worse. But from a moral, from a locker room standpoint, it's just unhealthy. Like Cat, he just doesn't look right. He looks so, to me, disengaged. Even though he's had some nice, couple of nice games, he's had some couple stinkers where he's just not involved offensively. And you know, they just got done re-signing him, and this is supposed to be the face of your franchise. And you know, I think Wiggins kind of it's just so hard to gauge with Wiggins anyways, because he takes nights off. This team just doesn't look happy. And I mean, Derrick Rose is probably the happiest guy because he's playing really well and he's healthy. But aside from that, it's just, you can feel like the cancerous in that locker room.
Yeah, so if I was in charge of this team, I was an owner, you know, what I would do here is I would clean house. This is a situation where you have Cat, you have Wiggins, they're both at a young age. You know, I try to get in the best young talent. Is that first round picks? Is that Josh Richardson? Is that some young pieces from the Clippers? I don't know. But I think I clean house, I get rid of Tibbs, I get rid of Scott Layden, the GM, and I bring in a new culture, a new head coach, a player development guy, start this thing from the bottom, whatever assets we get, and we kind of move forward. We build this team around Cat because we still know he has potential, and you doing this to him is kind of hurting his confidence and hurting his kind of feel for the game. Same thing for Wiggins. Seems like Tibbs probably was there maybe a year too early because they still needed a little bit more development and he didn't get that. And like you said, there's no sync in between the front office, ownership, the coaching and everything in the team. So they need to kind of just reset everything in my eyes and set a really good culture and just build this thing around Cat, because it's not like he's an old player. You know, he's still like, I think, what, 23 years old, and still plenty of room to grow. Plenty of years to have him, and Wiggins, who still has potential too. Obviously, the contract isn't great, but I think if you bring in a better coach in this situation that's more focused on developing the players instead of trying to win now, it would make a lot more sense. Same thing for the GM too. Somebody who's not trying to just go sign big stars, but maybe sign young pieces to build around these guys.
Yeah, I think those two can be fine. Those guys are cornerstone building blocks still. This team just isn't building around them at this point in time, which is the issue.
Yeah, now, if you were the Timberwolves, let's say you have an offer from the Rockets for first-round picks and filler contracts. Then you have an offer from, let's say, the Heat with Richardson, a first-round pick, and then some more filler contracts. What deal are you more interested in?
I mean, realistically, anytime you're going to be getting a young player, I think that's the deal you side with. Obviously, the draft picks, as you mentioned, they're going to be, you know, high-round picks, you know, or, 27th or 28th overall, which don't necessarily turn into Kyle Kuzma's all the time. So I think what you would prefer is the Jason Richardson deal. Obviously, he plays small forward. He has a little bit of everything. He's young. I think that's the direction you should go from a standpoint of rebuilding. I prefer that over probably Eric Gordon and four first rounders.
Yeah, it's definitely a tough decision, and it'll be intriguing to see if the Heat are willing to put Richardson back on the table after taking that offer down in the, you know, the Timberwolves kind of screwing that up. I don't even know if there was a first round included in that package. If there is no first round, it's just Richardson versus four first round picks. It's still the same thought process?
No. I need more.
Yeah.
Realistically, because from the Rockets, I'm probably going to get four first rounders and Eric Gordon, and I'm okay with that, because if I'm the Timberwolves, I get shooting, which they still kind of need. So Eric Gordon's a clear addition to that department. And then you get first round draft picks. I would prefer that at that point.
Yeah. And I think the intrigue with the draft picks, I know people are like, oh, they're late and they might not be as good, is the fact is you could package these picks. And I know a lot of picks that Boston grabbed, you know, looking at them, you're like, oh, it's not really going to be a good pick. And now moving forward, they had a treasure chest for about like 6 or 8 years and they still got a couple picks left. So I think it's something to consider. It depends on what your long-term goal is. That's why I think it's so important to be on the same page, the GM and the coach and everything along those lines and ownership, so you know what the picture is moving forward and what you're actually trying to do, not kind of this in-between land where you're like, oh, yeah, we want young players, but we also want to win now. I think you really have to have a clear-cut direction.
I agree.
Any last thoughts on the T-Wolves, Corey?
Make a move.
Yeah, do something. I agree. You got to make something happen. The longer you wait, I think the more it hurts your season and the progress and the direction that you're ultimately going to go in. Now, talking about some teams that are struggling, we'll start with Washington. You know, it's been a rough start to the season, 1-4. Last loss came against the Kings. They do play the Clippers tonight. You know, there's already been some chatter in the locker room and some quotes from John Wall and Bradley Beal about the team being selfish, not looking to, you know, play as a team, but more so play for themselves, and no real two-way play. Obviously, Otto Porter's really struggled, 10 points per game, you know, under 10 shots a game, only 23% from three. Dwight Howard's been out. Austin Rivers said that he's not the type of player to fit in. Are you worried about the Wizards and the problems they have?
Yeah, this was... On the preview series, we had said that this team could be a top, you know, five seed or possibly even a home court team in the East, bearing locker room problems. Well, we're five games in, and this team is already fighting amongst each other. You know, it's the one issue I have with John Wall as a leader is you can't be calling guys out so soon like this in the media. It's just not a good look. And maybe it's true. Maybe Austin Rivers is playing selfish. I'm not surprised by it. But also, you know, it takes time to get chemistry with guys, and if you're already this standoffish five games in, did he ever really have a chance to fit in? Like, it's just the attitudes in that locker room are such an issue. This team thinks they're so much better than they are. They do more talking than they do playing, it feels like. Obviously, I think Dwight Howard, when he comes back, does help this team on the basketball court, but who knows what happens in the locker room when
yeah,
they realize how bad, how annoying he can be defensively now. It's not a good look. I think Scott Brooks is too another head coach. We could see fire at some point this year, especially if this is how it's going to be from the jump.
Yeah, and it feels like this is a team that would have benefited from signing some veteran guys that are known for being great locker room presence to kind of, you know, mediate things in there. You know, the issues like we talked about, worst case scenario is this team doesn't make the playoffs and the locker room kind of explodes and it causes problems across the board. And now all of a sudden nobody's getting along. And I think you look at one thing is you have Otto Porter on that big contract, aka thanks to Sean Marks, but he's not getting enough shots. They're not trying to get him involved. He's not being aggressive enough. And there's just a lot of issues when your third best player isn't playing up to that standard. So I don't know what they're going to do moving forward. I think obviously they're going to wait out a couple more games. But are you concerned about them not making the playoffs this year? Obviously,
super early. Yeah, I'm not going to say I'm worried about them making the playoffs yet because I really got to see what Dwight Howard is like on this team. I still think that's a big component of how successful this team can be. So I'm not going to jump to conclusions yet, but I'll say that this team, they're definitely in danger of not being a playoff team. I'm concerned with the locker room stuff. It's not good. And like you said, Porter doesn't get used enough. And I kind of have a feeling he's going to get dealt at some point or another. It just feels like he's the odd man out. You can't be paying a guy this much money to not have him utilized offensively when you can get other guys. So I think Porter could be the odd man out.
Yeah, and Porter's on $26 million this year, $27 million next year, and $28 million the third year on a player option. Yeah, so it's not even like Otto Porter's a very good player, but moving that contract isn't going to be easy. You're going to either have to find a desperate team or a team that really believes in him. Other trades you could see possible. Could you see a possible John Wall or Bradley Beal team trade if this team is, let's say, the 500 in the playoffs are looking out of reach by February?
No, I think this team, the only way Bradley Beal or John Wall get dealt at this point in time is if those two go against each other. If you know they have a rift between the two of them or they don't like each other, it's become clear they can't play together. I think otherwise, if you're the Wizards front office, you try and make it work with those two guys as your cornerstones. I don't think they move them unless it becomes an issue between the two of them.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think maybe another possibility would be if one of them asks for a trade. They're like, you know, we're sick of losing to this nonsense. Right. And it just seems like everything with this team, you know, we have talent and we just can't put it together. You know, also we'll shout out a player who's actually playing pretty well. That's Kelly Oubre Jr. So he's gotten some good minutes. He's been playing decent. But overall, any other thoughts on the Wizards? Do you expect them to bounce back this month or it's something we're going to see later in the season?
Well, Dwight Howard's, what, a couple weeks away?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure. Obviously, Dwight's dealt with a lot of back injuries, which is kind of correlated to your butt and whatnot, and that's his main issue right now.
Gotcha. I'll give him until the end of the first week of November. I got to give him like four more games. I'm actually really interested to watch them tonight just to see how they look because I haven't watched a ton of Wizards yet. But
and the Clippers are a solid team. You know, they're not the most talented team in the league, but they do compete.
Yeah, and you know, Beverly's going to obviously bring it, because every time there's a top-notch point guard across from him, he gets a little extra fired up.
Yeah. Now moving on to the West, talking about a team in the West that's struggling, and that's OKC, 0-4. Obviously, Westbrook missed the first two games. They had that big meltdown against Boston. I think spacing is a clear issue. Paul George is shooting under 40% from the field, under 30% from three. Schroeder shooting 30% from the field. Grant 30% from the field. You know, when I checked this last night, they were 30th in offensive rating, 30th in effective field goal percentage, 30th in field goal percentage. You know, scoring is a problem right now. Offensively, there's no spacing. That was a concern going to the season. What are your thoughts about OKC right now?
Not even a concern. I think we all knew. And then we knew this team was not going to be good offensively, but we all thought that their defense was going to be enough, led by Westbrook and Paul George. Obviously, Westbrook only played two games, so it's kind of hard to – you can't really notch the offense for not being at its peak yet. But the idea was Westbrook and Paul George lead this team. You know, Schroeder's a six-man off the bench. Adams is consistent, and they just play really tough, gritty defense, and they just grind out games. You know, the defense has been solid, but there's just even less scoring than I think any of us thought. Patrick Patterson, still really bad. Schroeder has been dreadful on both ends of the floor. He doesn't guard anybody either. Paul George, streaky. I don't know what happened to his jump shot, but he's just so streaky anymore. It just feels like he misses 10 shots in a row, then makes five in a row. It's ridiculous how hard it is to gauge him. And then Westbrook, you know, 5 for 20 against Boston. I just don't think he's 100% yet. So I'm not terribly worried on that front, but you know, the guys around Westbrook, I'm concerned about almost every guy besides Westbrook, because he's coming back from an injury.
And I would say Steven Adams has been
fine. Yeah, and Adams is so consistent. Yeah, no, 100% agree with that one too.
And I think some of the guys aren't even playing necessarily bad, but some of them are just playing into their role, and they're asking them to do too much and things. They're not too many two-point shooters. And the thing with Paul George is I almost feel like they're asking him to do so much offensively because so many of the other options aren't good. Where it's like, all right, Paul, we're going to set up a play for you. We're going to run a set for you, get an open jumper. But don't worry, there's going to be three defenders already focused on you because no one cares about, you know, Jeremy Grant at the three-point line or, you know, Patrick Patterson because he hasn't been playing well. So it's just like there's just so many issues offensively where this is a team that I think would benefit, like we mentioned, from a Kyle Korver or somebody right away, make a quick move to get some shooting on this team because they're desperate for shooting because – it allows Westbrook to be so much more effective when the floor space because he's only going against maybe one or two people inside instead of a crowded paint with three or four guys.
No, 100%. I think you could even make the point that maybe, you know, Paul George and even Westbrook, they feel the pressure of having to be the offense, knowing that the guys around them just aren't effective scorers, knowing that every time you shoot the ball, you know, you really got to make your shots. That could be like an underlying thing too. Not that obviously, these guys are professionals, and they've been playing at the highest level for so long. So I know there's not that might not even be a pressure they feel. But knowing that your guys are around
you – it's literally a physical pressure, though. A physical pressure from the opposing defense is being able to just lock in on them.
Too, yeah.
So it's – like, they definitely have to get something done. Some of it, I think, is Billy Donovan trying to come up with a scheme that make them more effective where, you know, you're using different bodies across the court, keeping guys in motion with cuts and whatnot, setting good screens. You know, one thing Andre Roberson did well, even though he wasn't a great shooter, did a great job of using his body and setting people up for open shots. I don't know what they're going to do, you know, pick-wise or how they're going to get somebody in there, but they definitely need to figure out shooting. Maybe it's calling up a, you know, somebody from the G League or somebody internationally that can just knock down shots because right now they're desperate for spacing.
Yeah, this team is – I mean, this probably isn't a hot take, but I don't even think OKC is a playoff team. And this is how they're going to be throughout the year. Like, if this is what we see, like, if they don't make any moves, this is the odd man team out for me in the West.
Yeah, I feel a lot more comfortable that I put them in the lower seeding now because there is a good possibility they could not make the playoffs. Obviously, you look at a team with Westbrook, Paul George, and Adams, you're thinking that's a lock. But the way the roster is kind of constructed, you know, Pressey's done a great job of getting other pieces in there, but this roster just really doesn't have the shooting to compete right now. And that's obviously a big issue in the NBA. And being so hard playing defense with all the foul calls and whatnot, it's an offensive league. You don't have offensive players, you're going to be in trouble. What team are you more worried about, OKC or Washington?
I'm more worried about OKC. At least the Wizards have a lot of guys who can at least score. I think they have better, they just have more all around players. The Thunder just really locked into this. It's defense or nothing at this point.
Yeah, I think, and I think you could make the fact that the Wizards play in the East and there's a better chance of them kind of squeezing the playoffs with a late stretch of winning streak or something like that, where OKC, if you get yourself in a hole, it was already going to be a battle with 10 teams for eight spots. Now you're already, you know, behind the eight ball and you're looking in trouble. Who makes a trade first, you think, OKC or Washington?
I would have to say OKC. I think OKC is more desperate for a move.
Yeah.
I still think the Wizards can right the ship with who they have. But for OKC, I just don't see any way this roster turns it around to a point where I'm like, all right, their spacing's not an issue anymore.
Yeah, no one's going to wake up tomorrow and be a 40% three-point shooter that they weren't the night before. Now, 100%. Corey, any last thoughts on OKC or Washington before I move on to your segment?
One last thing. We can't blame this 100% on Billy Donovan. I know a lot of people are already calling for him to be fired. I feel like I'm the only guy who stands up for Billy Donovan. But it's – I don't necessarily understand what people expect when you give a guy a bunch of players who can't shoot. And then – and obviously, yeah, I guess he can run better sets. But at this point in time, the only guy who can shoot on OKC is Paul George. There's not a lot of shooters around him.
I would say a Breeze can shoot too.
And actually, that's the biggest knock to him, to Donovan, is Abrines, I don't think, gets enough touches.
Yeah. You got to just run him and make him into a shooter. I don't know if you can develop him throughout the season and make him more confident, but that's something they got to consider. You know, they just need someone to pick it up from three. It's really, they're desperate at this time. Maybe Patrick Patterson get back to the way he was shooting in Toronto, but I don't know what to expect. I think one thing that would help too is just, you know, Westbrook isn't 100%, but he's got to kill the bad shots. If he wants to take a bad shot, take it in the paint against three guys. Don't pull up from three. You're just not a three-point shooter, man.
I know. It's funny because like when early in that Celtics game, you know, he was driving and taking those free throw line jumpers, the pull-ups, and that's his game. Yeah. Full press, get to the elbow, get to the free throw line, pull-up jumper. It's his bread and butter. And then after that first quarter, man, oh, man, he just completely went away from it.
And I think some of it is it probably gets a little frustrating, you know, going to the paint against so many guys and you get a little fatigued, but it's something you just got to do, or you either have to get on the bench a little bit or pass the ball to somebody else and let them try to make a play.
100%.
But Corey, what do you got for us today?
All right. So today's segment is a little bit of buy or sell. You know, early teams are higher up in the standings. I think some people predicted. So just some buy and sell. So Nick, first up. The Denver Nuggets are 4-1. Are you buying or selling?
I'm buying. You know, I was buying before the offseason. I mean, before the season started. I just like the way that roster's constructed. I don't even think Paul Millsap's fully, you know, in sync with them yet. And obviously, you look at guys like Gary Harris Jr., Jamal Murray, Nikola Jokic, you know, some of the other young guys on that team. They can get better as the season progresses. They're not going to get worse. And obviously, Will Barton will be back in about a month and a half.
Yeah, I'm buying as well. They've been impressive early. Jokic is top notch. You know, we did the segment the other day. You asked me to be a top three center, and the more and more clips I see of him, I think that could be a true reality. The Nuggets they're playing very well.
He's got some beautiful touch, you know, not only on the passes, but his layup game too. It just feels like when you're shooting a layup, you don't think he's going to miss.
Yeah. Very confident too in the way he moves on the floor. Just a little bit quirky. Another 4-1 team, the Detroit Pistons. Are you buying or selling?
Now, the question is, what am I buying? I'm buying the Pistons as a playoff team. I'm not buying them as a top five seed. I think they could probably get as high as six. But I'm selling as them being some contender in the East. I think Blake has been great. But obviously, there's still injury concerns with Reggie Jackson, Blake, and the rest of that roster. And obviously, Luke Kennard just separated his shoulder, and they're going to need him for shooting.
Yeah, I'm buying this team as a playoff team. But that's it. That's what I think this team is somewhere between the 6 and 8 seed range. Obviously they're healthy right now and they're playing well. And Blake Griffin, you know, 51 points the other night. That's big time, but, I don't see them much more than that, but they're for sure a playoff team now, which I wasn't necessarily positive of going into the year.
Blake is impressed.
Yeah. He's been really impressed after everyone felt like he was overrated last season. It feels like this year he's underrated.
Yeah, he's definitely shown some things too. And I think one skill set that probably went under the radar for a while is like his ability to play, make, and pass. And he's done a great job of doing that in Detroit. And also big props to Dwayne Casey, who has really helped unlock Blake and help unlock some guys on that team.
Yeah, Casey was a fantastic new leader of the ship for Detroit. Next up, another 4-1 team, the New Orleans Pelicans. Obviously, their offense has been top-notch. Are you buying or selling on the Pelicans?
Yeah, I'm buying. I bought on them last show. I'm going to buy on them again. You know, you had to bring up the Pelicans after they got that win against the Nets last over the weekend, which really hurt. But, AD has been a monster. You know, they lost to the Jazz last night, but he didn't play. And I think they're just a team, like I mentioned to you, but I don't know if it was on the show or off wax. You know, I could see them making a move, a first-round pick, trying to get in maybe somebody like an Otto Porter or a Kent Bazemore, somebody to kind of solidify them on the wings. But I like what I'm seeing from New Orleans.
I'm buying as well. I think this team can be a contender out west. Not a true contender because it's the Warriors and then everyone's playing for second. But I think they can be a team playing for second. Anthony Davis is obviously big time. I love Drew Holiday more and more. And Randall and Elfrid Payton, they've been fantastic additions, both playing with a lot of confidence. And their games just look like they further evolved. Next up, the Toronto Raptors, 6-0, buying or selling?
100% buying. I loved everything I've seen from Toronto. I haven't watched every game, but I've watched a couple. And defensively, they just have so many weapons to throw at you. Offensively, they have plenty of options too. Just a really good, complete team, very deep, great bench unit. Kawhi isn't even 100% yet, and he's already looking amazing. And Kyle Lowry's kind of played with his chip on his shoulder. Loving what I'm seeing from Toronto.
I'm buying as well. They feel like an evil empire almost to me. Like, I don't know, the red, they're scary. They're a really good defensive team. I don't even think Kawhi Leonard's 100%. I feel like he's at like 85%. He doesn't look a terribly athletic yet to me. It kind of feels like he has an old man game going. I just think he's just not 100% in game shape. But he looked good. Kyle Lowry has been fantastic. Danny Green was a nice addition. I really like what Nick Nurse has done in Toronto so far in his tenure, so I'm definitely buying.
Yeah, I'm big on the Raptors. I think, you know, we'll most likely see Boston and Raptors in the Eastern Conference Finals, and that should be a great showdown. I'm more confident in Toronto than I already thought the entire – you know, I was pretty high on them in the offseason, but after just watching a couple games, I feel really good about them.
Now, for another team that's 6-0, a team that I was really high on in the preseason and before the season, the Milwaukee Bucks, 6-0, buying or selling?
Yeah, I'm buying too. You know, Giannis has been great. Like we mentioned on the preview show for the Bucks, you know, Bud was a big addition. Brook Lopez, Ersan Ilyasova, they look like a complete team, and they're just ready to take the next step. And another team I think could also make a small move at the deadline to kind of add another role player.
Yeah, I'm buying as well. I didn't know how fast Budenholzer was going to get this team playing in a space floor, letting Antetokounmpo run wild and free. And they, since game one, pretty much, they've had this floor spacing, and it's only gotten better over the first six games. Obviously, it's still early. You know, they've only beaten teams like the Knicks and Magic, but, you know, they beat the Pacers, Sixers, both in, you know, confident fashion. The Timberwolves on Friday, confident fashion.
They killed the T-Wolves, yeah.
Yeah. I think this team is for real, and I know I had them as a dark horse to be in the Eastern Conference Finals, and I feel 100% about that, them being a three seed in the East. Antetokounmpo possibly winning an MVP. His numbers have been sick. Like the rebounds, like he's averaging like 16 a game. I'm buying so much Buck stock. Now, last two. The Oklahoma – I don't want to use this one. That's too easy. Wait a minute. I'm going to mix these up since we just talked about them. All right, San Antonio Spurs, 3-2. DeMar DeRozan's been really good. Are you buying or selling?
I'm buying them as probably being maybe a little bit more confident them as a playoff team, just because of, you know, even though they rely so much on mid-range, they've been great for mid-range, and I think it's easy to forget how good DeMar really is.
Yeah, DeRozan's game has already looked more complete in five games with the Spurs, and I thought it could have looked in Toronto. Mm-hmm. Him as a playmaker has been a lot of fun, and being a exceptional rebounder. I just don't remember seeing him this active with the Raptors.
Yeah, Pop has definitely got a lot out of him, and I'm sure he's got a mean chip on his shoulder too.
Now the last one, the Philadelphia 76ers, are you buying or selling?
This is a good one. I think maybe some of the Sixers hype is a little bit down right now, and you know, obviously spacing is a major issue and bench depth. This is another team I think will make a move. You know, if they don't make a move, then I'm probably selling. If they make a move, then I'm definitely buying. Like I said, I think they do some more shooting, but getting those guys 100%, I think will have an impact too.
I'm selling. I don't think this is a home court team in the East. I think this is – I said I picked them as a five seed, actually. in our prediction show, and I think that's right, exactly what they are. They just don't have enough shooting. Obviously, if they get some shooters, you know, that might change my mind. But as of right now, I'm selling.
Yeah, I think it's a fair sell on them just because they haven't been really like world breaking or anything, and there's still questions with Markel Fultz and Ben Simmons, especially shooting wise.
Now let's have a little fun for the last two, Nick. Are you buying or selling your Brooklyn Nets?
Honestly, I'm really buying them. Like, I've, you know, check me out on the Brooklyn Buzz with my boy Jack Manuel. We talk Nets, you know, every two or three times a week. But the Nets honestly could easily be 4-1. Most people are like, oh, what? But they lost to the Pelicans on the last play of the game. They lost to Detroit in the last play of the game. The only team that's really beaten them badly was your Indiana Pacers. So I'm pretty happy with the Nets. They got a lot of depth. They're not 100%, but I like what I've seen from them. And I'm pretty confident in what I predicted, you know, during the offseason, that they'll be right around the 8th seed in the Eastern Conference.
I'm buying them for the future no matter what. As I mentioned before we got on air, I love the look of D'Angelo and Caris LeVert side by side. I think that's going to be a really good backcourt going forward. And as you mentioned, they've had some injuries. They don't even have Damari Carroll back. Aronde Hollis Jefferson's just getting back into the mix. I really like this young core. Obviously, I want to see guys like Alan Crabb shoot better, but I'm pretty high on this Brooklyn Nets core.
Yeah, I really like what they've done, and you know, they have good pieces moving forward, good flexibility. You know, I can't complain about anything Sean Marks has done, especially talking about 4 first round picks. You know, the hole Billy King put us in a couple years ago. So I'm pretty happy with the Nets.
No doubt. And then lastly, my Indiana Pacers. Are you buying or selling? They're 4-2.
I think I'm buying because they're pretty much what I kind of expected going to the season. My thought process on the Pacers really hasn't changed in the sense the only thing they did is add more talent with Evans and McDermott and Kyle O'Quinn as well. And I think, you know, they're going to be a team like I've thought of them last year, is they're just like a team. They play well together. They play offense. They play defense. You know, you're going to have to come and beat the Pacers. They're not going to just hand you over a game. So I really like what the Pacers are doing too.
Yeah, I'm buying. I have them as a home court team officially now in my mind. I love the bench depth. Tyreke Evans was a fantastic addition. Didn't have him last night, which maybe was why that game was a little bit closer than it should have been against Cleveland. They suspended him for being late to practice, which I like accountability, you know, be on time. Yeah, exactly. It sets a message that not even, you know, our sixth man can come in late. But that bench unit is good. And Sabonis, I think, is – who – was it Evan Dial that had him as a breakout player in our breakout player series? I know someone picked Sabonis, and it was a good call.
I think it
call.
Was Cam T.
It was Cam. Damn, Cam, you were supposed to be on this podcast. He lost power, unfortunately. But, yeah, I think Sabonis, too, has looked really well. Miles Turner still questionable, but Victor Oladipo.
He's shown some pretty good flashes though. Turner, you know, he hasn't been consistent, but he's shown some moments where you're like, all right, come on, Miles, just do this for the rest of the season.
Yeah, around the rim, he's still a good rim protector. Offensively, he looks more confident when he takes the jump shots and everything else. I just want to see him more aggressive on the boards. I don't like my 7-foot center playing. What did he play last night? 37 minutes and only, or 27 minutes, only had 2 rebounds. I don't like that. I would like to see more battle on
Lopez
boards
right there.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, if he's being an efficient offensive player and still getting blocks, then I shouldn't complain too much, especially in a win.
Exactly. That's kind of, yeah. So I mean, and as long as the team is rebounding well, and maybe he's just boxing guys out and maybe not just grabbing the board, which, you know, you want to see him be more aggressive, but it's not the worst thing that could happen.
No doubt. That wraps it up for the buy or sell segment for today.
All right, great stuff, Corey. As always, you know, thank you everybody for listening. Like we mentioned on the last show, OTG Basketball has been dropping a ton of content across the board. We got a new OTT series, over the top takes. You know, say that 3 times fast. A lot of different podcasts dropping every day. You know, Jorge Cantu's been dropping daily fantasy stuff. Milad's been dropping NBA bets every day. So be sure to check it out. We got content across the board, all different teams. We're only expanding as the season progresses.